The Red God has his due, sweet girl, and only death may pay for life. This girl took three that were his. This girl must give three in their places. Speak the names, and a man will do the rest. Welcome to Two Champs and a Chump, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast founded in 2010 by myself, Will Lentz, Brett Zeiler, and Greg Atkinson. Currently regularly hosted by myself, Brett, and Daryl Lloyd. Thanks go out to George R.R. Martin for the world we're all fans of, FFG for this amazing game, Card Game DB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward for the Creative Commons license music that you hear in this episode. This is Season 4.
Thought we'd go with something nice and morbid this time for our second episode. I don't really know why.
Because you're a sick, sick man. And I like it.
You know, that's probably true. Well, I think we should welcome our listeners back to another fine, fine episode of Two Champs and a Chump, where Daryl Lloyd is a host. I'm mentioning that inside the first 30 seconds because, you know what? Our mentioning last week paid off. This man, your host, got a pass to PAX.
Wow. Indeed. That's right. It's legit.
So did you find out what all does that actually afford you?
Nothing too crazy. I get into the exhibitor hall an hour early. I have access to a press room. Which
nice,
but I don't know if that's actually anything's actually going to be in there. If that's just a room where you can like write up articles, and it says it has internet access, so I'm like, whatever.
Yeah, that's what it is at Gen Con. It's just kind of an empty room. Like you can bring people in to interview them, you know, without just the big crowd outside,
oh, okay.
or you could sit and write and you know do whatever.
And there was something else. I can't remember. It's free.
Yeah.
So that saves me $140. So that's cool. I'm not sure.
Jeez, between that and the booze at World Championship Weekend, this is turning out to be a pretty profitable business, isn't
oh,
it?
Oh, yeah, man. Let me tell you. It's great.
Don't worry, Kyle. You'll get to start taking advantage of this soon.
Oh, yeah.
I can only hope.
So, no, but seriously, I'm very excited about it, and it's very cool. Because, really, I wasn't sure what it would take. I mean, PAX East is video games first. They do have an area of card games and things like that. So,
yeah, wasn't there like a fairly big Magic like tournament or reveal of some new thing up there last year?
I don't know. Maybe. But I still wasn't sure that I was going to get one, so I'm glad I got one. And I'm excited to go. And hopefully I can do something with the press pass, right? So
yeah, go looking around for something related to Thrones in any way, shape, or form.
Definitely. Something report back here to Thrones Central.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what we are. So we're two champs and a chump, parentheses, Thrones Central, end parentheses. Bam.
We are so
very nice. Too legit to quit?
I don't know.
Almost 150 episodes. I mean, might as well keep going.
Cards.
Fresh cards.
Yeah, I love that new card smell. And I think, as far as I can recall, that's been the biggest news in Thrones World this week. We've got a new pack coming out. I think it should be in stores by the time this episode hits.
So, super excited.
Yeah, last pack in this cycle. And there's some doozies that were saved for this pack.
And I like that, because, I mean, there's usually, what, a 3-month lull between cycles? I don't really pay attention to...
Yeah, it usually seems like there's some kind of lull, which I think always sucks. I want the next one ASAP. I need my fix, man.
At least we got some good things that I think will give you a lot of toys to play with in the meantime. Oh, there's a lot of cards here that open up some possibilities for you to at least tinker with.
Yeah, I think it'll be some good ones. Okay, well, before we get into discussing those actual cards, just a very brief recap for the listeners. The rating system we're currently using here on Two Champs and a Chump is the ABCD and F rating system that many of you will be familiar with from the U.S. school system. A, of course, being the best, and F being, well, a fail. And we generally tend to shade those a little bit with pluses and minuses. Though every once in a while, Daryl declares that he is not going to use any.
That's right. Keeping it old school, bitches.
So, shall we go ahead and give it a whirl with our first card then?
Shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Who would like to read our first card?
I'll do it.
All right.
I shall take up your... Okay, I don't have anything to go with that.
Nope.
All right. So, first card out of the pack is Maester Cressen. He is unique. He is House Baratheon. He is zero cost with a little S there, so he's a Shadows card. He's got two strength, an intrigue icon, a power icon, the Maester trait, House Baratheon only. He has the response, after Maester Cressen comes out of Shadows, or... after he is killed, return the topmost card of your discard pile to your hand. And he has the Shadow's Crest. That is awesome.
Boy, is it. He's, I was about to say like a mini Dale, but maybe mini is not quite right. He's certainly looking pretty awesome,
he's
though.
He's Dale with a twist. With a twist.
Yeah. With a twist of line.
Yeah, I mean, he's cheaper for similar stats, the two cost and two icons. He's got a good trait for sure. But, I mean, that Shadows Crest, I think, really opens him up because you can bring him out then at the start of any phase to grab whatever you want back. Like, for instance, say you could bring him out at the start of the standing phase to grab the Westeros Bleeds that you just played during the dominance phase.
Yep.
Yeah.
Whereas Dale's got that kind of lag time since you've got to wait for the next marshalling. You know, something else could happen and dump a card in on top of it and keep you from getting it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I like the possibilities.
Awesome.
Especially, I mean, you know the Valor's coming and you need to refill your hand. You can literally pop him out and plot. Kill him off.
Yeah, and
get
two cards out of it.
No, there's some fun tricks there. I like him. I mean, well costed. He's two cost, so he's going good for your Noble Cause deck. An intrigue icon.
Yeah, and actually provides them with a little bit of resiliency.
Yep. And there's synergy to be had with some other Shadows cards, and maybe one of the first ones I think of is Sister of Truth. Like, what? Who's going to play that? Mel, maybe throw one in there. Hope to bounce him back into Shadows, right? And you can bounce him back out at a later time. I love the idea of the topmost card in your discard pile. That is awesome. That's indiscriminate, you know, return to hand. So it doesn't do some garbage like put it on the top of your deck like some cards do. Stark, but it, you know, puts it back in your hand. So, I mean, it's really cool for a combo or maybe for just a little extra efficiency, you know, bring them out and, hey, you got a card back from your hand that was discarded via Intrigue Challenge or something like that. So, very cool. He's awesome.
Yeah. Well, and you're talking about returning him to Shadows, Daryl. Do you remember a little gem from the Song of the Sea cycle? Good old Cape Wrath.
Oh.
I think a lot of folks kind of wrote that off when it came out.
I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah. just win any challenge by 4 or more strength and choose a card you control that's currently in play with Shadow's Crest and return it to Shadows.
It's probably better.
You don't even have to kneel Cape Wrath or anything.
It's probably better than the Sister of Truth idea, possibly.
Yeah, yeah. I think it'll take a little less work because you're going to still be wanting to win challenges anyway. And just keep popping him back into Shadows.
All right, well, let's grade him and move on with our lives. I guess I'll grade him first. I'm going to give him a B. Because a B is never wrong.
All that for a B.
All right.
Hey, he is still a good card, but it's not like he has any sweet keywords or anything. He's very good, but he's not insane.
But hey, I think if anything from the past regional season and tournament season has taught us, it's that you need guys like this. These are the cards that make it so you stop having to run Chuds to round things out. Now everything's efficient and good and impactful.
I mean, we saw Dale shoot to the top, you know?
Yeah.
And I think Crescent's actually going to be a little better. And one other little note on him, I actually think he'll be nice to try and help Maester decks get back on their feet. You know, they get a Maester with some chains on it that gets hit with cold hands, all the chains fall off. Well, Cressinger way to start getting that chain train running again. But yeah, I mean, if we saw Dale jump right up there, and I personally think Crescent's a little better. So I'm willing to give Crescent like an A-.
Oh.
Yeah, better is kind of a relative term. I forget exactly what we rated Dale right now, so I'm hedging that a little bit.
I gave Dale an A. Crescent's maybe not. That.
Okay. So maybe slightly worse. He's not maybe not as easy to keep triggering over and over since he needs to die for the second half of his. But his timing ability is a lot better. So I don't know. Maybe it's a wash.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a solid A. I love S0 characters just for the versatility that they bring and having an ability that anytime you can. I mean, he's got a come into play effect. And you can get something out of it when he's killed. Those kind of things I love, because it's all positive all around. There's no real negative here. Solid A.
All right. Let's move it on.
Sounds good. Kyle, you want the next one?
Mace. I'll take good old Mace. Mace Tyrell is going to be a 4-cost unique Barra character. 3 strength, mill, pow, House Tyrell, and a Lord. No surprises there. He does have Renown, and reads, if it is not Summer, reduce the amount of power required for each player to win the game by 1 for each power on Mace Tyrell. So, I mean, it was funny, I was reading some comments and some initial reactions to him, and I laughed because they talked about how he's not necessarily flashy or for someone as quote-unquote important as Mace, which is completely debatable on a whole another level, but...
You mean important as far as the books go?
Yeah, as far as the books go. Good old Mace letting his mother run the show.
Yeah.
But I think it's super good. I mean, not super good, but it's a renowned Lord. I really wish he had a noble crest. I'm kind of yearning for that. But he's kind of reminds me of double renowned Robert, but... not.
Yeah, maybe slightly worse because of the season requirement and the fact that it's also reducing the power your opponent needs,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of awkward. I keep looking back at that and thinking, man, that's a downside.
I mean, all he's saying is that it doesn't have to be Summer. That's all.
Yeah, the season requirement doesn't bother me. I mean, and there are some tricky plays there, like you could Red Queen's Faithful to snag some stuff and throw it on him. If you can find ways to, I don't think you can ever build a deck around him, but if you can find ways to throw your power on him in sneaky or quick ways, it could, you know, help close out a game, steal a win. I think he'll see some play. I think if we get more House Tyrell support, he might be, you know, more of a house. But
might see more melee play. Possibly.
Ooh, that's where I think he's super dangerous. When you're making everybody's necessary power go down.
Yeah, you should do that. And that's run scary. A run a like treaty with the North. Deal too.
Oh wow!
Get this game over quick. Hey, look on the bright side. Whoever's in the lead is gonna try really hard to protect him.
I think you ought to just slap head of a dwarf on him, so he's got infamy as well, and then all of your power has to go to him.
See, there you go.
Then everything is nicely doubled up.
Yep.
There you go. All right, let's grade him.
I'm gonna give him a C+. C's get degrees, and I think he makes some deck cuts, but I'm just, I don't know. Yeah,
just not excited about him, right? Is that what you were gonna say?
Yeah, he's a little vanilla. I think there's some utility here, and I think you can find ways to bring out the most of him, but he doesn't excite me as a deck builder.
Yeah, sure enough. And he doesn't really have any flavor that fits with, in my mind at least, with some of the other Tyrell stuff we've had before that, you know, kind of combined some of the Lanny and Baratheon stuff or did neat things with melee and whatever. So he's not a huge, like, flavor win for me either. So I'm feeling like a C for him. Yeah, he fills a role in some of those more classic Bera Rush decks that want to slap, like, Banner of the Storm on somebody. But he's not great.
Yeah, if I'm paying 4 cost for a unique character, he's got to be a baller. There's a lot of awesome 4 cost characters out there, and there are a lot of 4 cost okay characters. Mace is okay. He will definitely bite somebody in the ass or something like that, but I don't think he's a game breaker. I'm going to give him a C.
Right on. All right, next card. Guess that's me. Riches of the Reach. Now, this one is a House Baratheon-only event. And it says, any phase, draw 4 cards, ignoring the draw cap. You cannot draw cards for the rest of the game. And, I mean, it's pretty obvious that just screams noble cause to folks. And it's definitely kind of an all-or-nothing card. Let's just push for it and try and win it right now. And who cares about later? And, you know, it might really help them out. I don't know if I would run... I certainly wouldn't run 3. I'm not sure if I'd run 2. Maybe 1. It's a tough call there. But I could kind of see a pretty interesting early turn where I draw a cap off of King Robert's debt, get 3, play Riches of the Reach, maybe at the start of the next turn or something, get another 4 once I know they're not about to reveal rule by decree, and then just have this chock full hand to slam stuff down and try and win.
Yeah, I mean, you'll see some uses. I mean, like I said, it ignores the draw cap, so you can get your 3 and then play it to go over the top on your, what's that event where you claim, you draw a card for each renown power you claimed?
Yeah, that was King Robert's debt, yeah. And the thought of potentially drawing 7 cards in one turn is pretty awesome.
Yeah. And so, I mean, there's something there. And you have to remember, you know, you look at, you can't draw the rest of the game, but with that agenda, you know, that's 4 rounds. I mean, it's spread out. It's not as hard as it hits, like, a normal house. I think you'll also see a lot in Melee as one of those cards that maybe you run one of, and you just, for that last turn where you need to jump out, and or at least be in the lead when the round's over.
I mean, if any house could afford to not draw the rest of the game, I suppose it could be Baratheon, just with Mel schemes and some other ways to get cards into play without drawing them. But
yeah, you can still run your Much and Mores and your Desperate Tactics. And
yeah, that's actually a good point.
There are things
you can, and you know, with the Desperate Tactics and whatnot, you can dig down to a single copy in your deck pretty easily and find it if you need it.
And you're throwing 4 things in your discard pile you can possibly recurse, so...
Yeah.
Which would be there's funny, because, I mean, that's an influence event that works extremely well with this, so now, I mean, influence has certainly not been something I've thought about when building Noble Cause decks, so it'll be interesting to see if you start seeing that a little bit.
Yeah, man, I sure hadn't thought about that either. But yeah, maybe somebody would want to go for a little bit of a slower roll Noble Cause deck. Shoot for winning on like turn three or something, maybe turn four tops, and use some of that other stuff to kind of offset your lower draw. And then once you get everything, you know, kind of set up in place the way you want it, slam the Riches of the Reach, grab a bunch of cards, and go to town.
Boom.
See, I feel like this card could have been like draw four cards, ignoring the draw cap, prized four, and would have been fine.
Ooh,
so if they would
boy.
Have come up with the prized mechanic, I think that that would maybe have been a little better for it than can't draw the rest of the game.
I don't think maybe. So.
Oh yeah, that
no?
totally would have.
Think
been.
So? You think that?
I think it would have been a more powerful card, certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if it'd been better per se.
I think I would go with better. You'd drop that. No, I mean,
yeah,
seriously,
I mean,
you drop that first turn out of Braytheon, give your opponent four power so that
you can steal
quickly
it all.
Take it with the four
yeah,
cards.
Yeah, steal it
you
all.
Just
no,
got.
I guess I
yeah.
meant, like, better, like, for being viable and balanced and
yeah,
seeing some
well,
play.
Well, you know.
Sorry.
No,
take
fair.
All your fun away.
All right, let's grade it and move on.
Yeah, let's get the fuck out of here.
All right, as far as the grade goes, you know, it is just so build specific, and I really don't think it's going to make you know, a cut in most Barret decks, or and even if it does, I think it'll just be like a singleton. So even though I'm kind of positive on it overall, I think actually grade wise, it's probably like a D+ card.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm also going to give it a D, and I'm not ignoring the fact that it ignores the draw cap and can draw you four cards and everything, but not
draw equals win. A great man once.
But not drawing cards for the rest of the game. Come on, man. I mean, I don't know. I suppose if you know the next couple cards in your deck, you filled it with like 50 characters or something, and you know that you can win it on that turn. Maybe it will win some games for some people, but it's not winning any for me.
I like it. I mean, you're essentially maxing out, you're draw capping yourself plus your draw phase for the next round if you're building out a Noble Cause. And, you know, if the point is to win now, like, this will help you win now. I think you see a lot of 2-ofs in Noble Cause decks, and the impact can be so huge. I'll give it a C+. I'll at least put it on the positive side of things.
Alright then.
Okay. Well, thanks back to you, Daryl.
Alrighty. Next up is, oh, oops. Okay.
Grand Good Brother.
Alright, he is unique. He's House Greyjoy. He's 2 cost, 2 strength, a military, and an intrigue icon. He has the Bannerman trait. And he reads, if you control more locations than each opponent, Grand Good Brother cannot be killed or discarded from play.
Way to go, Gran.
All right, Gran. I mean, that's not bad.
Super solid is the phrase you're looking for, Daryl.
Oh, yeah. He totally is. Killed or discarded? I mean, and he's already, even just a, like as a unique 2-for-2 with military and intrigue in Greyjoy, I think I'd be down for that. Throw in that he's a Bannerman, and he turns on Graydon Goodbrother a little more. Not Graydon, Gorold. Wrong Goodbrother. There's too many of them. And then throw in on top of that that almost all the time he's just going to stay in play forever. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially with the attachment we're going to talk about in a little bit. I think he's super good. And the more these cannot be discarded effects that Greyjoy gets, now on top of an offensive Valor, so we're talking about maybe an offensive Westeros Bleeds. You can start getting some crazy hyper-reset stuff out of Greyjoy.
Totally possible. I mean, and their location control abilities are going through the roof. They got the event last pack, and now you've got 4 Good Brother Bannermen that you could be running in your deck for Gorold, who, you know, is the discard a card from hand to Neil X locations. or X's your bannerman count. So, man, you're just not going to be able to get location stuff through on Greyjoy at all now.
Yeah, and Greyjoy has some nice boosts to up his strength and whatnot, too. So if you're going to be playing a lot of locations, you know, you'd see some naval escort action or something like that. So,
yeah. Speaking of his strength, he's nice in the old way. You can still chump attack with him. Yeah, even if your opponent defends with a bigger guy, Grand can't be killed, so.
Well, oh, yeah, okay.
I mean, as long as you have more locations, but come on, this is Greyjoy we're talking about.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to give him a C. I don't think he's as good as that Crescent, but I think he's all right.
I think I'll have to rate him higher than that. He's very solid. I can't think of any of my Greyjoy decks right now that I would not want to go ahead and throw in a copy of Gran. So I'm feeling a very solid B. He's not like a game breaker, but he deserves to be in most decks.
I'll give him a B plus because I think he's better than Will thinks he is.
All right then, which is
just
way
that
better
teeny
than I
little
think
bit
he is.
Yeah, I think Daryl's
like
wrong
this is
on
Carl
this.
Carl the Maid all over again.
No, don't say things.
No?
Like
that. Okay, we'll see.
It'll be similar.
It will be.
Oh, well. Is this one to me?
See you.
Yep.
Oh, boy. Speaking of locations, we have a new longship. Longship Maiden's Bane. That was Daryl's nickname in high school, I think.
That's right.
Unique 2-cost Greyjoy, of course. Warship trait, because you can't have enough of those. And in challenges, during a challenge, kneel Longship Maiden's Bane to have it participate in the current challenge on your side as a character with cannot be killed and X strength. X is the number of warship cards you control.
That seems cool.
Seems very cool. He's essentially a tricon that's all, at least one strength just from himself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, he can't ever initiate a challenge on his own, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, we wouldn't want to just totally break the bank on characterless decks, but...
Yeah. He's still going to be awfully good. He's good in old way again, so he gets that cannot be killed. You can chump block all day long if you want. What's that, Kyle?
Yeah, the surprise. There's that threat of the buff jumping in.
So, is the sexiest part of this card the fact that you can turn it into a character, essentially? Or is the coolest part of this card the fact that it says warship cards you control and not warship locations?
You know,
turn our own dudes into warships? Or are we rocking and rolling?
I think so. I think Rhaegar's Harp then might be useful for that deck of yours, Daryl.
We doing some crazy maester stuff too, or I don't know. Give out some traits,
you know,
man. I don't know.
It's possible. I don't know if it's all that useful, but it's sure possible.
It's not the point to be useful. It's to be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, Greyjoy Maesters was a thing before and isn't too far off from being viable again. And you already wanted to run the trait link in there to turn people into dragons. So, I mean, if you've got that link and don't happen to have the Horn of Dragons yet or something, yeah, you could turn somebody into a warship just for an extra buff here for Maiden's Bane. Seems reasonable.
Cool. I guess we don't have a whole lot more to say about it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just a cool effect. I like it. And I like that it can't participate in a challenge on its own. Or, sorry, it can't initiate a challenge on its own. Which, you know, like Kyle was mentioning there, kind of reins in the character-less decks or whatever. I like them to be semi-viable, but I don't want them to be real good. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's also the theme of the naval enhancement, the naval attack. You can't initiate a naval attacker without somebody already attacking. But I guess you can do a naval defender, though.
Right.
Okay. So it's right there with that enhancement.
So it fits nicely in that theme pretty well, which is cool.
I mean, just, I mean, that's super good. Just a CVK, I mean, you have to treat him. He is essentially a Tricon. And that strength's usually going to be 3-4. I mean, he's going to get big.
In Greyjoy? Oh, yeah. You know, what Greyjoy deck isn't running a River Blockade and maybe a couple Scouting Vessels, LIV for sure, you know, and some other odds and ends depending on what they want to do with the deck.
Can it get past Stealth, too?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. I wasn't sure where that window was. Cool.
Well, you just wait till
in
after.
Fact,
to...
Yeah.
I yeah, either, you could do it either way. You could jump it in before Stealth, Daryl, or you could wait till after, because while it's a location, it can't be Stealthed anyway.
That's a good point.
So you wait to see what they're blocking with, and I think it's super good. I can maybe even see this as like a House of Dreams kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Dream it. Hell yeah.
Maybe it's some way to give it like Intimidate. So they could just, like, negate a challenge every once in a while.
There you go.
I mean, that would be kind of a fun deck, the Warship House of Dreams deck there.
All your R Warships are belong to us.
It's awfully Shaga, though. Awfully Shaga.
All the ships.
Anyways, let's rate it.
I'm going to give it a B+. I'll give it a B+. I think it's very positive.
Wow.
Again, there's no real con here. I mean, even if... for some reason, you're like, well, its ability is kind of situational. It's still a warship. A Greyjoy deck doesn't go, oh, I don't want a warship.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking about, like, what could end up being one of the ultimate defenders for your house and just the biggest pain in the ass to deal with. I'm going to absolutely give it a B. Maybe it's the Timmy in me, but I want to see this guy roll some dicks.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think he's going to be I'm talking about it like it is a character. I don't think the location here is going to be, you know, a real force to be reckoned with. It's kind of cool. I like it's a little bit of a new space still with the warships turning into characters. But it's, you know, it's not a real big, awesome, crazy effect. It's just reasonable for some decks, so I'm going to give it a C.
All right.
Well, remind me next regional season to replay that little bit of podcast for Will.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
We're
going to
change
a
longship
to Will's
Bane.
If you own me with Maiden's Bane.
Will's Bane.
All right, fair enough.
I mean,
you crushed me in a regional
ships,
match
I
this
suppose.
Spring with it.
I think that thing's real good. I think there's
yeah,
a lot of hidden power there.
I agree with you. All right, let's move it on.
Okay. I guess it's me then.
It's you, homie.
This is a Greyjoy attachment, Euron's favor. It's favor attachment. It has setup and must be attached to a character you control. Any phase, discard a warship location from play or from your hand to give attached character +4 strength and deadly until the end of the phase. Seems like more old way fodder, really. That it's got that threat of activation there, especially since you can discard one from hand. They'll never know for sure if you have one in your hand or not. And you can just force through a lot of challenges without even having to discard anything.
Yeah. I really wish it was Intimidate instead of Deadly. But whatever. That's asking for
yeah,
too much,
I,
maybe.
I wish it was Intimidate as well, because that would play into a few of Greyjoy's other effects, and there's not really... any surprise Intimidate except for that one event, you know?
Yeah, like maybe like +2 strength in Intimidate. Maybe that's not enough. I don't know. I mean, it's still good as it is. Don't get me wrong, but...
Yeah, I dig that. And zero cost.
Hell yeah.
Has setup, which is pretty rad.
Yeah.
Absolutely good.
That's always good.
Shit, yeah. What do you think, Kyle?
I'm going to at least poke around with it. I mean, just being a zero cost setup attachment... I'll give it a C+.
Hmm. Wow.
Well, you also have to remember, I was staring at this card trying to think of tricks, and I'm totally stealing this from someone, and I forget who, and I feel awful. But you have to remember, you can use it as a way to maybe get out of house locations in, instead of just having to like rely on your Hulks if you haven't caught one. Like, let's say you're running Meraxes.
And Iron Lore.
Just Meraxes and Iron Lore back in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I
that's
mean.
Possible.
I mean, that's one moderate combo that's not, I mean, it's pretty marginal, but I think there's some stuff here, and like I said, zero cost setup, I think that in itself usually warrants at least a C.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. You know, I would kind of put it in the same realm as, say, the Apprentice Collar. Like, there are even non, you know, Maester's Path decks that I have run Triple Maester, Apprentice Collar, sorry, in, just because it's the zero-cost setup. It goes on a character, maybe protects him from a little burn, has an effect that's, you know, marginally applicable in the challenge phase and whatnot. You know, and I just kind of want to bend that setup curve a little. So, yeah, he's worth a C.
Yeah, I guess, and the rules in the game are you can't use an opponent's card to pay a cost, right? So the fact that it says discard a worship location from play, it has to be one that you control.
Right.
Okay. I'm just clearing that up for whoever was out there that didn't understand. I'm going to give it a C as well. Like, I think that it can do some really cool stuff. Don't get me wrong. But you still do need a location to drop from your hand. It's cool that you can do it any phase, and you can discard some locations and try to cheat them into play. Like, that's all fun and cool, but it's not insane. Anyways, moving on. Oh, now we have the Lannisters. So, next up is Grand Maester Pycelle. He is unique. He is 3 cost, 3 strength. Intrigue, a power icon. He has the Maester trait, as well as a Learned Crest. And he reads, response, after you win a challenge in which Grand Maester Pycelle participated, discard up to 2 cards at random from the losing opponent's hand. Then, that player adds the same number of cards from the top of his deck to his hand.
It's a walking without beard.
But he has a beard. What is going on here?
I know.
What's going on?
How messed up is that? Come on, FFG.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
But yeah, seriously, I don't know, kinda man.
Kind of sucks.
Yeah, I mean, okay, like, stat-wise, he's okay, right? He's got 3 for 3 and a couple icons. Good trait, good craft.
I like the other ones more. Even not even the draw one, the plot one. I'd probably run before this guy.
Yeah, this guy doesn't have as impressive an ability. I will admit, though, when we drafted at Worlds, someone else had him, and I forget who it was. Was it you, Daryl, that played him against me, and it kind of wrecked me?
I don't think so. I mean, no, I don't remember. I would have remembered that.
Okay.
Maybe Brett. Did you play Brett?
It might have been. Yeah, I did play him. But yeah, in draft, it wrecked me, but I think in a constructed format where, you know, you don't have like one copy of your power card in your deck, you have 2 or 3 depending on what it is, and you've got actual draw engines to fill your hand, I think the loss of 2 random cards and then the replacement with 2 other random cards, is not going to be felt in the same way at all.
Yeah, and with decks being as efficient and redundant, not necessarily redundant, but the top decks we keep seeing are all filled with impact cards. There's no, like, lame card in the deck or something just to fill around things out. Everything played as an impact. So in today's environment, to drop 2, I mean, let's say best scenario, they're like super high impact cards, and you're just going to give them 2 moderately impactful cards. I think the days of, oh, those are 2 keys you were needing to spring that trap, and I've ruined it, are a little behind us. So I think there was a time where this could have been cool. I just don't know if that time is now.
If this Pycelle had come out in, like, the core set, he would have wrecked face for a couple of years.
Yeah, he may have his time whenever he will come in handy. You know, you don't have to trigger the response every time. Maybe you have a Maester deck, and you don't want to play the other Pycelle. You know, I don't know.
This one does have higher strength and gets him out of easy range of, like, Flame Kissed or Venomous Blade and things like that.
So
that's
something.
You also kind of
want the other one to die. Yeah. To die to trigger.
Well, depending on which one, yeah.
Right.
There's the plot one and the reveal.
I still part of myself.
You know, yeah. Sometimes, I don't know. It's, why can they replace it? But yeah, in draft, and maybe that was the idea when designing this character came about, is like, hey, draft, man, it could wreck your face.
Yeah, obviously they were working on draft at the same time.
I mean, random discard always sucks. I mean, maybe, yeah, I don't know. I was trying to think to compare it to, like, maybe the old winner agenda or something, sort of like that random discard, but then they still get to just add it back to...
Yeah, I mean, it's the same argument I made on Without His Beard.
Yeah.
On your end, like if you're playing against me, Daryl, and I've got five cards in hand, you discard two of them that you don't know what they are, and then give me two that you don't know what they are, you are in exactly the same place.
Right.
Before and after that exchange. Now, for me, that may or may not change because I know what it is, but it's all the same to you. It makes no difference on the probabilities on your end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, there's a situation for him somewhere, but I can't. Let's just grade him and move on.
Yeah. Okay. I'll jump out there. I'll give it first. And I hate to say that, but I think I'm gonna give him like a D+. He's better than Without His Beard because he is a character. He has a body, and he is a slightly higher strength maester. That 3 strength is good for them. So I'll give him that much.
You can use him for Outwit, which is cool. And there is a situation somewhere where this ability will come in handy. So I will say D.
Yeah, when there are other versions of a card out that kind of fall in the same structure, I tend to grade them, you know, very harshly, especially against their, I guess, peers, if you want to call them that. And he just doesn't. I can't imagine a world where I'd run this one over one of the other two. So I guess I'll give him a D-.
Is that the same as an F+?
No, it's not.
I don't think a -- is a thing, is it?
It is now a thing.
Okay.
Get off my ass. We made up the grading system.
We didn't make it up. The American school system has established that for a long time.
Yeah, come on, man.
There's a joke there somewhere.
All right. Moving on, boys.
Yep. I think that puts it in Kyle's ballpark, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Or puts it somewhere.
Yeah, we'll find it. Next one is another setup favor attachment. We have Tywin's favor this go around. Again, 0, House Lannister. It is a favor. Setup attached to a character you control. Any phase, discard attached character from play to add 4 gold tokens to your gold pool from the treasury.
Boy, it's a 0 cost setup attachment.
I really
That's
like
something.
It.
Oh, snap.
Really? Okay, tell me more.
Well, it gives all these weenies and chuds that we run to round out our decks, you know, some added boost. If you see the Valor coming, or you really need to bring, let's say you're running, I mean, it's Lannister, so usually you have some Shadow Stack in there, even if it's just a splash of it. Let's say they're running the King's Law, or you really need to bring 2 cards out this round, it would help a ton. And pop this guy whenever. I just think there's a lot of cool uses for it. And 4 gold's a pretty big boon. Let's say you're doing like a gold matters kind of deck, and you just need that last little push to trigger Sitting the Iron Throne 1 or 2 more times, and this is a great way to do it. Again, 0 cost setup, so you're helping your flops. You know, Lannister's really getting a lot of these. This increased levy, I like both of them. So.
I do like the levy quite a bit, but I think that's because you don't have to lose 2 cards to make use of it. I think, by and large, I just like the regular gold boosting cards, you know, Castellans and this, that, and the other, or Castellans, sorry, moneylenders or stewards, and all that. because you're really losing out on, I mean, if you're boiling the game down to just like a strict numbers game as far as like cards in and cards out, which some folks do, losing two cards of your own to trigger this, that really hurts. And I'm just not sure four gold is worth it to lose two cards.
I think about two scenarios. Think about early game. Let's say you set up this and you put it on like a weaponsmith. So that weaponsmith is going to count the gold he provides that you spent on him slash the attachment that first turn. So even if first turn you then ditch him, now you're up four gold.
I think that's going to be the key.
And that can be a pretty good rush, you know, especially how some of these Lannister control decks pump some gold in the system.
Right.
Because they have long-term gold. You can see things, you know, like the gold roads and the weenies and stuff, and there's some sustainability there. But, you know, other than, like, the coin mint, which is really just a more versatile C, like, this is another way to kind of get you that flash gold. So you see the early game setup, I think it can be good there. And then late game, like I said, with, like, sitting there in throne or to kind of push you over the top, once you either get the lockdown or get the game to a place where it's kind of in the balance and you just need to take the upper hand.
Right.
It can help push there. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think it's rocking, but I think it's good.
Yeah. I mean, that's the key, is going to be its setup keyword and maybe doing some janky stuff at the beginning of a game. You know, I mean, I don't know. Maybe some blockade shenanigans or, maybe a way to, maybe running it with like some Martell, like, treaty stuff, where you're trying to get less guys and you're able to, like, discard a dude to have less characters. I don't know. It's okay.
You know what would also be cool?
Can't really
with,
say a lot about it.
No, there's some stuff here. Like a Ygritte turn, or if you enslaved something, that could be fun.
Yeah,
oh, there you go.
Now, I do like that.
That'd be hilarious.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
So
that's,
if Lannister,
that's a good idea.
This, like,
because it doesn't say a Lannister character.
It says a
nope.
character.
A character you control.
You know, but if you're waiting to do that sort of thing, you're definitely losing out on the setup benefit.
That's still four gold.
Well, I'm just saying, like, if you draw it, like, if you draw it in setup, it's great there. If
you're also still losing two cards if you do that, because you're losing your enslaved.
But I'd blow two cards to discard one of their characters, essentially uncancelable, and count four gold.
Or what if we're going nuts here and we're doing like a Lannister, Maester, Horn of Dragons, take control of a dude and then like take him and discard him, gain four gold, and then use our Bronze Link to bring our Tywin's Favor back and do it again.
There's something there. Yeah.
I do like the way you think. That's a pretty sweet Shaga idea. I'm not convinced yet. It's a Jamie idea.
Yeah.
But I do kind of want to work on that.
That sounds really nasty, yeah.
Or like with the Tyrell stuff, you could maybe play Mel's Favor, and you're only going to get him for a little bit, so play that first, steal it, put this on it, and then pop it. You come out of gold ahead, kill a dude.
Oh, okay.
Just discard a dude, but...
You'd pop it, and well, and since you're adding four gold, if you're playing Baratheon, you play... Breaching the wall during the dominance phase, or whatever it's called. Not breaching the wall. That other thing.
Damn.
I'm not sure which thing you're meaning.
The one that discards an
outcast. Oh, the event.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's
grade it. I think there's some tricks there. I like tricks.
There are some tricks.
I'll give it a B-.
Yeah, its stock just went way up just from that idea I had, so I'm going to give it a C.
Daryl's giving it an A.
No, I'm giving it a C.
It went way up to a C.
Hey, way up to a C, okay? That's still good.
Yeah. You know, I admit, you guys have swayed me some with some of those ideas and stuff. I'm willing to give it like a C-. I'm still not enthused about the card economy, so to speak, there. But there are definitely some tricks.
And some treats.
Maybe in like a Laney Hollow Hill. You lose a setup part, but... Like that first turn, getting some gold.
Nah.
Imagine this was like Red Wine Straits. You'd have count like a million gold.
Would, but I really hate that two card loss even more in Knights of the Hollow Hill, where you start behind the ball.
So Lanny,
the faster you make that difference up, the better.
Lanny Knights of the Hollow Hill. Then you play a Flea Bottom Scavenger out of house. Then you put this on it. Then you discard the Flea Bottom Scavenger. Yeah.
Let's get your own four-fold back.
Yes.
Four-fold back.
And have
day one card. Still efficient. No matter how you spell it, that is efficiency.
If you're going to do that, Daryl, you might as well just play, what was it? Winter Tax? Was that the name of it? The zero cost.
Summer Tax.
Summer Tax. Or Tax Dry? No, Summer Tax.
Summer Tax. And there you go. You just attach it to somebody's house card and then draw a card. And it's a zero cost attachment.
Or
you might as well just do that, Daryl.
Don't try to build a deck without some panache.
Taking all the fun
out. Dude, I used to run Summer Tax just for that reason, just to cycle it.
Oh, man. All right.
Anyway, next? I think we should move on from Tywin Savior. I'm next.
Okay. You guys did
with
great.
A card I am pumped about. What? I gave it a C-.
Well, boo.
Daryl gave it a C.
Well, boo.
Ha. All right. Let's move on to an awesome one. This is a Lannister event. It is not a Lannister event. It is just an event. Lashing Out. Challenges. During an intrigue challenge, kneel two of your Lannister characters to kill all attacking characters. Limit one per challenge. You know why I'm excited about this?
Clansmen.
Well, a number of reasons. But the main reason is because I had to correct myself. It is not a Lannister event. You just need to use Lannister characters. You know who has quite a few dual House Lannister and House X characters?
Baratheon.
Anybody? Nope.
Martell.
I mean, yes, but not who I meant. Martell.
Yeah.
And some of those are totally worth playing in Martell, and I think there's the chance Lashing Out is really going to surprise some folks. If you just throw, like, one copy in your deck just to really screw with them, yeah.
Mm. Super good. Yeah. Like I said, I like it. I know everyone's like, boo, melee, but you can do this. It doesn't say, like, in a challenge you're in, they're not participating.
Yep.
So, if the guy's out in front, and you're like, I really want to shut this down,
boop.
There's some rain in your brain. And that's hilarious.
Yeah.
I love it. You know, there's the thing, or the issue where people tend to commit less characters to intrigue challenges than even power challenges, and certainly way less than military. But I think you can still find the chance you're going to hit some valuable stuff.
You know who's going to intrigue challenge me with, like, all their dudes? Lannister Rush. So I'm going to kill their Cersei and their Littlefinger and probably their Tywin. Intrigue with everyone? Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that'll cause some real issues in Lanny v. Lanny mirror matches. Yeah.
Or it'd be really
one
good
of them
to
power behind the throne. Ugh.
Or you can shut down a Noble Cause deck on like a Power Faith turn.
Yep. Just blow out a bunch of those holy guys all in one turn.
Or that'll deal with Martell. The flavor text on this is maybe the most badass flavor text I have seen to date.
You want to read that then?
I cannot do it justice, Will, as the official quote reader.
I can't quite read it on this little bitty piece of art.
All right,
let me see. I think I got it. A day will come when you think yourself safe and happy, and suddenly your joy will turn to ashes in your mouth, and you'll know the debt is paid.
God.
We really should have just used that for the quote at the start of the episode.
That is actually, that's really badass.
Yeah. You know, though, am I the only one that really thinks it would have been way cooler instead of, like, Lashing Out if this card was titled The Reigns of Castamere? Like, isn't this the kind of awesome effect you want for a card with that name?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It doesn't have the revenge aspect I feel like that should have. Should be something like that.
Really?
You screwed with me. I don't know. I feel like
it,
Reigns of Castamere needs
it
to
feels
have
like it to me. Oh, you tried to attack me on my home turf, the intrigue challenge? I'll kneel two guys. You're dead.
And then I go, paper shield. He calls it thinking.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I can't. He calls it thinking. I'm paper shield it.
But you can sure paper shield it.
I would never paper shield it. I would hands judgment it. It's the ultimate card.
You can. But I think you're right, Kyle. We're definitely going to see a lot more paper shields floating around on the backs of this and the Targ event. I mean, a lot of other things. But these in particular, I think, start drawing people's attention back to, hey, you know, Paper Shield can cancel some of that stuff.
All those prize events.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and give it a B. And that's not to say, it'll be, you know, fantastic for every deck or it's going to work every time. But the times that it can work can just obliterate someone. I mean, Lethal Counterattack has been doing it forever. Not the greatest card, not the most insane card, but man, it can wreck some face and be very powerful. So I'm going to give it a B.
In Melee, I give it an A, and in Joust, I give it a C. So we're just going to average that out, and I'll go with Daryl and give it a B.
Wow. I hate to just agree there, but I think I'll give it a B, too. It's not for every deck, but it's a very, very powerful effect, and Kyle's right. In Melee, it's even more awesome.
That's right.
I love it when players that aren't even involved in the interaction can jump in and just wreck face like that. Like, there's something about it that just... I think that's what makes that format cool, because, like... Some guy you're not even thinking about it. He's like, I'm just going to kill your dudes. Just not even looking at him, not even thinking about it. Love it. All
right.
Yeah, like, that's the sort of thing that makes for great Melee stories, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Way to go, Daryl.
Sorry. Okay. Next is... am I next?
Yes, sir.
All right. Now we are at House Martell. The next card is Southron Heiress. She is 2 cost, 2 strength, military intrigue. She has the Sand Snake, the Bastard, as well as the ally trait. And she reads, Southron Heiress gains stealth and deadly when attacking a player who controls more characters than you. Kind of the opposite of Sand Snakes in a way. Just because there's so many of them.
Yeah, you want a lot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're trying to get you to build kind of a hybrid.
Maybe. I think I would still want to run her in the, like, classic Sand Snake deck.
Yeah.
Because she'll still get a bunch of keywords from the other Sand Snakes.
Yeah.
So I think she'll be worth it. She seems cool. In Melee, she'll be awesome when you can choose to attack someone with more characters than you.
Yeah. Solid.
We have ways. I think there's some cool stuff here with, like, Ghast and Grey, so you can change up your character count. And...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And the new Dane guy that goes back into Shadows to take icons, and the Orphan, the Green Blood, of course, and things of that nature. You know, you can change your character count on the fly, basically.
Yeah, I like that. Plus, she helps the new agenda, which we will be discussing later.
Geez, spoiler alert.
I know.
Golly.
Yeah.
Not,
I mean,
they don't
she's,
have the cards
she's
in her
pretty
hand.
Much perfect for that kind of deck. She packs a lot of punch into a small body if you've got the
and she's not
the
unique.
Condition.
So if you're running character light stuff or we have less characters, usually you talk about having really beefy quality to high cost uniques. And she's someone you can throw in there to kind of round out that curve while still supporting your theme.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She's not bad. You know, you look at some of the other 2-cost characters in House Martell. I mean, that's not necessarily an easy place to get into, but she'll be fun. I'm going to go ahead and give her a C.
Go ahead, Will.
Go ahead, Kyle.
Oh. I'll give her a C+ because I like her more than Daryl does.
Oh, well, that's a good reason. In-depth analysis.
Yeah. You know, I'm feeling probably like a C+ as well. She is up against a lot of competition in that 2-cost slot, I think. But she combos well with some of Martell's themes. So I dig her.
Cool.
Double cool.
Yep.
All right, Kyle, throw it at us.
That's me. All right, the next Martell card up is Secret Schemes. Now, this one is a House Martell only event. And reads challenges. Neil X influence to reveal X cards from the top of your deck and add them to your hand, if able. Then shuffle X cards from your hand into your deck. So, yeah. It's a way to filter. I mean, that's really what this event is. It's kind of like a different take on Desperate Tactics.
Mm-hmm.
Or Measures, whichever one. Somewhat.
Measures, yeah. Tactics is a card, but yes. it is very different. It bounces armies in and out of play.
Yep. I always get the names confused. But, I mean, it's a different take on that. So if you run Heavy Influence and you just got to catch that Bleeds this turn or get your Ariane back or whatever you're going for, this could be an effective way to do it. But...
yeah.
Paying a lot of influence to dig deep. I think a lot of times I'd rather just knock off one and just sacrifice the cards than do this. Especially if you're running heavy influence, like your Counting Tub, 4, 5, 6, running Prince's Plans, just get your Desperate Measure stuff back anyways is probably the right way to go. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's definitely a dig card, and it feels like it's the sort of thing that like a combo deck wants, but it's going to have to be a combo deck that doesn't want to use the influence for anything on the turn you do that. You know, and it's only something you can do during the challenges phase, which is kind of weird. So if you're like digging for something you need to marshal on the next turn. It's got to make it all the way back around. And,
I try not to think about those guys. When I'm building a deck and I'll look at, okay, well, I'm totally screwed and I'm desperately looking for this card so I can... I mean, I just don't go into decks usually with that kind of mindset. Yeah. Especially not the devote.
Well, I wouldn't say totally screwed. I think it would have to be more... you have a specific combo, you're trying to assemble cards X, Y, and Z, and you just need them, and you don't really care about anything else. Which is not the sort of thing...
I like those sneaky sand snake decks out of Hollow Hill.
Yeah.
Maybe first turn... just kneel the two and just hope you can catch one. I don't know. I think there are some plays for it, but you're going to have to really think and really evaluate how badly you need it.
Yeah, I have never been a huge fan of, like, drawing cards and discarding that many cards or something like that. But this card, for some reason, I can sort of dig. It seems like it would be super fun if you have, like, a deck that, for one, draws a lot of cards. So you already have a lot of cards kind of at your disposal. And once you get everything kind of cooking, you get some influence out there, and you go into the challenge phase with, you know, maybe a Red Viper and a Chud or something, and you dig down there 4 cards deep or something, and then you replace them, and maybe you try to draw into some of those other control cards or something. Like, that could be fun, and, you know, but... I don't know. It doesn't really fit the theme of kind of what Martell's been doing with some of those dig cards and with the cards that shuffle, you know, discard cards in your discard pile back into your deck and like that Prince's Plan stuff. Yeah, I don't know.
So here's the question then, Daryl. Is this better or worse than Unbowed, Unbent, Unbroken?
I think I'm better.
Okay.
I think it could still be better.
I think so. It's a tough call. This can't be canceled as easy. But there are things that you can do with that discard pile, and you mentioning that was what made me think about it. So
yeah.
I'll give it
So what kind of?
I don't know. I think it's definitely on the bottom half. I'll give it a C-.
I'll throw it out there. I'm going to go with a D. I don't think it's going to really see much in the way of play.
I'm gonna give it a D because I'm sure there's a. It's just above my play grade. Is that is that a nice play on words? My play grade. So perhaps a better player will find a way to utilize this card, and maybe there's somebody right now listening that's like, "Damn it, you guys, this is so cool! You can do this, that, and the other." Hey, if you can find an awesome way to use this card, message us, send us, or write on our Facebook page or whatever. Tell us how awesome this card is, because we can't figure it out. I will give this card a D, and like I think that there's some that could be fun maybe in a casual setting, just to like dig deep in there. But come tournament time, I just don't see it. But maybe I am open for suggestions.
Maybe. This is another one I could see maybe in Melee where you can grab the influence and help even more.
Yeah.
Oh well, because you're more likely to run combo-y stuff there.
Yeah.
Maybe. All right. Yeah.
What's next? Who's next?
That'd be me.
All right.
Next one. Strangely, we go to neutral cards now. We have Littlefinger. Bit of trivia. This was designed by the player community at Days of Ice and Fire in 2012. All right. So, Littlefinger here is a Shadows card. He has a Shadows cost of 10. He has 3 strength, intrigue, and power icons. He's a lord and an ally. He has stealth, and he is immune to opponent's events. But then you may reduce the cost to bring Littlefinger out of Shadows by a single opponent, your choice, current power total. Increase the claim value on your revealed plot card by 1 when attacking an opponent with more power than you. Could be kind of cool in Melee again, I'll say, where you've got more targets that are apt to have more power than you, though he only really becomes cost-effective once they are up there quite a bit in power, you know?
I'd say at least 8. I think at S2 he becomes what I would pay for that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That's like when I go to, when I think of an S2, I think of Tyrion, and I put him in there.
Yeah.
I mean, and claim raising is pretty good, you know? Your claim 2 intrigue challenges can really screw with people. Claim 2 power challenges can end games, and if you happen to have a 2 claim plot already revealed and he's bumping it to 3, that's the sort of thing that seals deals.
But, I mean, so let's say they have to have less power than you. So in Joust, let's look at a scenario. Let's say they do have 8 power. Now you got to be lower than that. So, I don't know. I think he's good. I'd be a little weary. He's one of those cards I think is always going to be on the bubble for me. He's going to be like the last one in or the first one out.
Yeah, I could see that. You know, he's still an ally. He's immune to events, which is nice. And that actually might be a saving grace right now to, you know, keep him out of Bleed's vulnerability and such. But he's still vulnerable to Varus and Okart and
And if you're
Zora,
doing a bunch of shadow stuff, I mean, you're not necessarily, because you don't really need it for him, but, I mean, I love the reduced, the not kneel to attack one is still super good, and you'll see some competition on that front alone.
Yeah, so, you know, if you're doing some of the Shadow stuff, you've got Kingdom of Shadows available, which could potentially stand him and let you use him in 2 challenges. I mean, if you are down and, you know, you manage to get him in that mid-range where you're down but not out, he can put you back on top pretty quickly, I think.
Yes, that's true.
He is I mean, you can get away with a lot of cool stuff. You can get away with a lot of cool stuff in Melee. I just don't know how many players are going to just want to put him in their deck to, like, wait around until somebody's, you know, got a bunch of power in their house and then to bring him out kind of in the later game. Maybe Joust? I don't know.
Yeah. I'll give him a B.
Save your ass in a Joust game.
Wow. You'll give him that high of a rating despite thinking he's a bubble card. I would have figured you'd rate him lower for
Well,
for that.
I think you're going to hear... Like he said, he can win you games. And coming out of shadows, not necessarily seeing it coming. I mean, that impact factor. I like cards that do that. That this can be a card that someone's going to storm over to you after a round and bitch about. ruining a game they had what they thought in the bag. And when I think about that and I dwell on that, and I dwell on being that player that they're bitching about, that definitely boosts it a little bit for me. So I'll give it a B-.
His saving grace for me is that he doesn't have to be participating in the challenge. So as long as he's there, you are increasing your claim value against that player if they have more power than you. Which is really good, because I was getting ready to be like, well, you know, Victarion does this on a more consistent basis and this, that, and the other. But Victarion does have to be attacking and participating in that challenge. So I'm going to give him a C.
You know, that's a good point. Honestly, I had kind of misapprehended this when I first read it. And I was thinking it was just while Littlefinger was attacking, but he doesn't have to be participating, which is actually cooler.
Yeah.
So good catch there. And I think that pulls him up for me a little bit. I'm going to put him at like a C+. I do like, it feels like a pretty Nedley card to me. You know, Shadows already fits for Littlefinger. The Immune to Events, I think, kind of fits. Like, the stuff that's going on around him doesn't ever seem to really touch him and hurt him. And as, you know, some people's fortunes go south, he gets, you know, stronger and more powerful. So I think that kind of...
Yeah, like he's waiting in the shadows to make the right move.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's Nedley's balls, right? I mean, it's tight.
Nedley balls. They are definitely...
I mean, it's very thematic, which is really cool. And the art's okay.
I don't know about that.
I really want there to be a little finger art that is awesome. Like, just, for God's sake, just base it off the guy from the TV show. Because he's perfect.
I think it should just look exactly like him. He's pretty perfect.
Yep.
Bring Counting Coppers back, you fools. Anyways...
Well, and there's also, you have to remember, with all the prize stuff, we're probably going to start seeing elevated power totals. I think power is going to swing more than it currently does. You're going to see more ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
So if you catch them on a high one, or like play a bunch of prized events to pump the pump it up and then bring them out real quick.
Yep.
Yeah.
That is sure possible.
Yeah. So maybe he's better than I think. I don't know. Alrighty.
Alright.
Next up is, we're going to keep with the neutral theme here, is Alaris. Alaris is unique and 2 cost, 2 strength, intrigue and power with the Citadel trait. No attachments.
That's weird.
The Citadel trait, yeah. No attachments. And then reads, if you are not running an agenda, Alaris gains response. After an opponent running an agenda wins a challenge as the attacker against you, name a challenge type. That player cannot declare attackers or defenders during that challenge type until the end of the phase. Limit once per phase.
Boom, pow. I wanted to have a Lurga Crest so bad, and I'm still going to give this at least a B+ on A.
Yeah. I mean, that's the sort of thing that really... kind of changes games. Like, we've already seen several things pushing against agendas, and we've seen a couple different character agenda decks, or no agenda decks, kind of pop up to the top of the ranks over the last 6 months. And Alaris pushes hard in that direction.
Yeah.
Well, it does say not an agenda, so you can't even be doing character agenda shenanigans. You have to be...
Right. That's a good point.
Agenda game.
Yeah.
Well, Lanny will be fine with that.
Yeah, I was going to say, Lanny, no agenda is still dope. I wish Alaris had Vengeful. It just feels right. Anyone else? Just,
I like
doesn't
tossing.
That just feel,
you know,
right?
The keywords.
For Sorella, I mean, Alaris to have Vengeful? I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, boy, I don't know. I kind of like the no attachments on there. gives actually kind of some protection from, say, flame-kissed or from being, like, drugged up with the milk of the poppy or
enslaved.
Something. Yeah, or
that
being
would suck
enslaved.
Balls.
Mm-hmm. Or even Mel's favor, for that matter.
But don't worry, you Griddle take control of Alaris.
Yes. So it's interesting.
But its ability won't work, because obviously you're not running an agenda, so... She can steal them all day.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But... yeah, but then you're not being hit with that ability.
Well, yes.
And maybe you're running a no-agenda deck, too. Maybe it's a no-agenda mirror match. You take Alaris, and now you get to trigger it. I don't know. I'm not a doctor.
I was like, what? But then why would they be running an agenda?
No one's running an agenda. Will's wrong. Can I give this an A yet?
An A?
Yeah,
okay.
I think you can.
You can give it an A. With all those stipulations, Alaris is a kick-ass card and a great way to kick agendas in the dick. But I give it a B.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stipulations there.
Sort of. I mean, as long as you're not running an agenda.
And your opponent is running an agenda.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's going to be 75% of your games or something. Then your opponent only gets to make two challenges against you, is basically what that says.
Yeah.
And that's pretty awesome. And that also even works in Lani Power Behind the Throne. They'll still only get two. They'll win one against you. You get to trigger her. Oh, no, sorry. It's limited once per phase. No.
Yeah.
So they'll still get to make three. Apologies.
Yeah.
But that's pretty big, I think. So I guess I should give a rating, which I skipped out on doing. I'm going to give Alaris a solid B+, I think, because, yeah, it does have to go in specific decks.
Yeah.
I guess. Next up is we're moving on to Starkland. We have everyone's favorite, the redheaded stepchild of the Thrones community. Sansa's up.
She does kind of have reddish hair.
No, only a little bit.
Yeah. Well, and some of her card art really does. But this one.
In the book, she does.
Who I think might be my favorite to date is a 2-cost unique. Stark, obviously. 2 strength, intrigue, and power icons, lady, and a noble. The response, after you play her from your hand, search your deck for a card. If you have the fewest cards at your command, add it to your hand, otherwise discard it, shuffle your deck. I think that is super hot sweet.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
I've never looked at Stark Hollow Hill, but I'm gonna... After this.
I mean, it's good whichever result you get out of that. If you get the card you want in hand, great. If you already know it's going to be discarded, you know, there are things you may want in your discard. Maybe you're, I don't know, playing the Kindly Man character agenda, for instance. And you just want to go throw those Bannermen straight into your discard pile.
You can never have too many Berserkers over there.
I mean, who's to say this is even going to come out of a Stark deck? I guess that's the better question.
Oh, yeah. That's worth playing out of house in a ton of decks. Vera Hollow Hill definitely wants to play.
I was going to say, there's a lot of decks that could use
Martell
this.
Martell probably does.
Yeah, hell yeah. Just a
or
card.
For a one-sided dig. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. This is just... Oh.
Am I the only one that dreams of playing a Stark Summer deck, though, with Summer Encampment, so that I can just pay 2 gold every turn?
Yes.
Keep bouncing her and searching every turn?
Yep, just you.
That'd be nice.
Okay, well, never mind then.
That's not just you. I mean, we've always had a soft spot for Summer Encampment and doing some of those effects. It would be neat. I mean, you do have to have less cards at your command, but...
Right.
Oh my god, wait a second. Yeah, so wait, as long as you have less cards at your command, if you can keep, like, bouncing her and playing her, you can just keep doing that? Is that right? Oh,
well,
no.
Cards in your hand count, so.
Yeah.
Right.
But still.
Yeah, so it has to be, like, stuff you can play. Like, say you were searching out events that you play and then go to the discard pile, so, like, they will be out of the areas that are counted for command.
Yeah.
Then you'd be set.
This could be good. This could be very good. All right, let's rate her.
Yeah.
I'm giving another A. Super good.
Yeah, an unconditional search effect that's one-sided, regardless of the stipulation, absolutely an A in my book.
Unconditional, but with a stipulation.
I was going to say
Okay, I'm saying the unconditional searching for your deck. Like, it's any... You're right. I use the wrong phrase
for
that. But the fact that it's any card...
Gotcha.
I'm sorry, everybody, okay? The fact that it's any card is awesome.
Yeah, and you don't have to show your opponent what the card is, which is rad,
that's so
too.
Good.
Yeah, I think she's phenomenal. There's going to be a lot of decks that want her out of house, even if it may only just be as a one of. So I think I'm going to give her like a B+ as well.
I think this is the first search in the game where you haven't had to reveal the card that you searched for, right?
Oh no, I think there's a couple others.
Is there some others? I can't think of a single one.
I'd have to do a little search on it, but I believe it does exist.
Right.
Harwin, I think, from the last pack, did he make you? I think you just could search and then put it on top of your deck.
Okay.
Harrenhal, I think you get to search the top three.
Deck. Okay, my bad. Damn it, Harrenhal. Okay, anyways, let's who's next? Is it me?
And for the record, Harwin does not make you show. And he does get searched the whole deck.
Oh, Harwin.
But anyway, yes, it would be back to you.
Alrighty. Next up is the long-awaited Rob's Favor. So obviously it is Stark. It is one cost. It is the favor trait. It says, attached to a character you control, limit one per character. While attached character is attacking alone, increase the claim value on your revealed plot card by 2. If you win that challenge, discard attached character from play. Cannot be saved.
I like it. Again, especially in a Kindly Man deck, I think you'll see some...
Oh yeah, that's hardly a downside in Kindly Man. Not being set up sucks, but this is one that I feel is way more worth that trade, losing 2 of your cards for what is probably going to be 3 to 4 of theirs, assuming you're making a military and intrigue challenge with it. And, you know, military and intrigue challenges at that high of claim, well, as I said earlier, tends to seal deals.
Seals deals.
Mm-hmm. You got to win on your own, though. But there's definitely ways.
Oh, there are ways.
Push that.
Yes.
Yeah. With all the other like claim effects they have, I mean, you can just wipe the board, wipe their hand, clear their house card, whatever you want to do. It can get crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's really good.
And if you want to do the Maester thing, then you can link it back into play. As long as it's, you know, the top attachment on your discard pile, get it back and jump it into play because it's only one cost.
Now, here's my question.
Just an idea.
Is there a way to, like, abuse this? Like, say I had a way to initiate the attack with the character alone and then a way to, like, discard Rob's Favor. Would my claim value still be increased by 2, and would the effect that discards my character still play in there?
No.
Okay.
Whenever you lose the favor, you would also lose the buff.
Damn it.
That's a bummer. Yeah. Now, I want to look. Wait. Isn't there a... doesn't Targ have somebody... Sorry, Targ. Doesn't Stark have somebody that can't be discarded if they have an attachment or something like that? How is he worded? Nope, I must be imagining that. I was running a search just now.
Start character that can't be discarded.
Yeah.
If it was a weapon, damn it, if it was a weapon. Right? Then you'd have Cat of the Canals.
She's not immune to your stuff.
Oh, okay, never mind then. Nope, no way to abuse it, but I mean, that's fine. We like balance. However much we like to play with the idea of broken cards, we like balance. And this dance is a fine line. I mean, it's really good. It's really good.
Yeah.
Winter is coming. Maybe you also play Winter is Coming, too. Oh, man. All kinds of toys. All right. If you had to grade it, I guess I'll go first. I'll give it the Daryl Lloyd seal of approval. Gets a B. That's my seal of approval.
I'll give it a C+.
I'm just feeling a solid middle of the road B. There's going to be some decks that want it, but it still takes some setup here.
Okay.
All right. I guess is it back around to me now?
I think so.
All right. This is another one I'm excited for. We're moving on to Targaryen, and we're getting new versions of the dragons, guys.
Aw, yeah.
Yeah, they look pretty sweet. The first one is Viserion. That's the white one. He's 3 cost, 3 strength, a military, and an intrigue icon. He's a creature and a dragon. He has stealth and no attachments, and he says that Rhaegal cannot be killed.
Cool.
This is honestly the only one that I think is an improvement over its predecessor.
What?
Honest to goodness.
Are you kidding right now?
No, I'm really not.
Viserion? You think this is better than the Viserion that blows up locations? Are you high?
I think in a lot of those decks it's all about rush or aggro and controlling the board. I don't feel like the ability is as strong. It's certainly not as strong as Rhaegal's. Being able to keep him alive, I think, is huge. And it's an intrigue icon.
You are high,
I think it's the
bro.
Only one
so
that I think...
All about rush. Like, do you remember the John Bruno deck, the House of Pain of Days of Yore? Using that Viserion to great effect?
But those are days long gone.
They are days long gone, but I'm just saying that Viserion is still baller.
It is. I'm not saying this one necessarily is better, but if any one of the three was going to be an improvement, I think it's this one.
Dude, I think Rhaegal has always sucked ass.
Well, and he does have that intrigue icon, and I think that's worth noting.
Yes.
Even aside from abilities, the icon is solid to have.
But is it worth dropping a strength and losing the power icon? But it does keep Rhaegal alive, who I think is, you know, if you're going for the rush, he's kind of that heart and soul.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going the rush way, then this one's pretty sweet. But I don't know. Should we talk more about these dragons as a package deal? Should we rate this one now?
Let's just rate them as a package. As weird as that, like, because obviously by themselves, if you just like throw in this one Viserion in a deck, it's like, it's okay, you know. Like, the idea is to synergize.
He's just fine by himself, I suppose.
I mean,
he's not blowing
intrigue and
away.
Stealth is never bad, but I think these cards obviously are kind of a package deal. I mean, I'm sure that you can throw one in to a deck somewhere, you know, but I don't know. I don't mind just grading them as a package, but however you guys feel fit is fine.
I think you have to. I mean, they're obviously interlocking pieces. I mean, moving on, like, if you move on to Drogon, he obviously is just there to complete that triangle. I mean, he has no leg to stand on.
The triumvirate.
Yeah. I mean, by himself, I really would not be all that interested in playing Drogon there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll just rate him as a whole. Like,
yep.
We can acknowledge the fact that it'll be really cool to, like, have a a buffed up dragon that you'll want to keep protected maybe by throwing one of these guys in, but in the end, they are a package deal. So we'll just move on to the next one, then we'll just talk about them at all.
I think the next one's you.
All right, next up is Drogon, obviously unique in Targaryen, creature dragon, 3 cost, 4 strength, military icon, renown, no attachments, Viserion cannot be killed.
All right. Should we go ahead and read Rhaegal 2, just wrap it up, and then carry on?
Yep.
All right, you're up, Kyle.
Oh, it's me. So this time, our green scaly friend is 3 strength, 3 cost, military power, creature dragon, no surprises there, deadly, no attachments, and Drogon cannot be killed.
Alrighty.
So, I think they're okay if we didn't see Greyjoy getting tons of CBK stuff for what I think is a much easier trick to pull off. You know, if CBK was like a rare, like a super, super rare hot thing, and this was just mind-blowing, and there were tons of kill effects, like universal sweeping kill effects, I could see it being stronger, but I think CBK's...
Like Valor Morghulis?
Well, it's one.
Yeah.
And if you don't have all three of them out, like, if I see two of them, I would just drop it and be like, well, you're not going to get the third. So, I don't know. I think they're okay, and maybe we'll get some stuff, more dragon love or something, but as they stand, I just don't think they're an improvement on what we currently got. Even as a set, even if all three are out there being CBK right now, you're playing a Hollow Hill deck, there's going to bleed them all away. There's other ways to control them. All you need to do is blank one of them and you can start, you know, picking at the pieces.
I will admit,
plus getting all three characters on the board at the same time, consistent.
I mean, there are a couple locations that do some cool stuff for the dragons. I mean, I will say that, but I still like the other ones more. The big 4 cost, like when one of those guys, like those guys, also all have ambush, and like we all know how amazing ambush is with these dragons. Why these ones don't have ambush is beyond me. But
that actually, that would have been pretty sweet.
Yeah.
At that 3 cost spot, that would have made them much more playable. But I don't know, they're cool. I think they're kind of Shaga bait.
Oh, well.
Because you look at that and you go, ooh, cannot be killed. And you just kind of dream of having all of them at once.
Yeah. I just keep looking at Drogon and he's just so... Not 3 costs for a monocon. I mean, I guess he's got renown and his abilities. I think that you can't judge him just on the ability, because that's gravy. To have them both at the same time is a huge luxury.
Yeah.
So, well, you're paying 3 for 4 strength monocon. He's like a slightly pumped up hound who we get for free.
All right. Yeah. So, what are we going to say that they. Well, let's grade the package as a whole. Yes. You think a C? Okay.
About as bitter and light C as we can give.
Ooh. Kyle.
Yeah?
Hang on.
Okay.
You were cutting Try out.
It. Yeah, you're cutting out. Try that sentence again.
Yeah, I'll just give him a C. Like a C minus minus. I just, as low as you can go while still being moderate to average. I just don't... I don't know, they don't sit well with me. But what do I know?
Yeah, I mean, I like the big Shaga flair, of course, that CBK gives him. That definitely made me open up my eyes to look at him at first there, but they just don't do a whole lot else, which is a real big drop after the prior dragons. So, yeah, I think I've just got to give them, like, a C. The other dragons will continue to see play over these.
Yeah. I hate to just agree and just say, hey, it's a C, but the problem is, you know, I still like even some of the Shadows dragons better than these ones. These just don't really...
The Hatchlings?
Yeah, the Hatchlings, sorry. Yeah, I like the Hatchlings, some of them. better than these ones. So, yeah, I think I'll just give them a C as well. Like, they're not bad. It's just whenever you have the other options, you know, it's just like an alternate of any other character. Like, there can be a better one out there to play. Like, in their own right, they're okay, but I think I like the Dothraki guy that gains renown during power challenges or whatever.
Better
than all
this.
These dragons, yeah.
You know, I'd hate to agree with that, but I think I might. The Dothraki trait has a little more punch there. I mean, you know, Danny gives the dragons a lot of punch, but part of what makes that so powerful is their abilities, whereas the Dothraki just kind of want to hoard on the table.
And again, there are some locations that'll buff these guys, but they're a little more cost effective, I guess. But without that ambush, I mean, that's a huge, huge boon for those other dragons. Oh, yeah. Well.
All right. Next card. I guess that brings it all the way back around to me then, doesn't it?
Yes, sir.
All right. This is a Martell agenda. This is Bloodthirst. Of course, it's Martell only. And at the end of the challenge phase, the player who controls the fewest characters draws two cards. I like the sound of drawing two cards. That sounds pretty rad.
Yes.
Well, especially on a Martell, which, I mean, there are some draw effects, but a lot of it is, you know, cards coming in through alternative draw methods, I think is the phrase I want to use.
Mm-hmm.
Reveal and put in a hand and whatnot. So to get two straight cards, it can be good. I think there's some decks here. I think we're starting to see some, like even in this pack, some support for it. So it may not necessarily have all been flushed out and at its, you know, peak yet, but I see some decent strength here.
Blood?
Yeah, I mean...
Go ahead.
Oh, no, you can't.
All right, well, I'm just going to go ahead and go out there and say it, and that is that Bloodthirst is Titty Town. I think it is excellent. If you're playing the right deck for it, obviously, you want to build around that idea, and that harnesses the perfect theme of Martell, the way I've always liked to play them, and that's to control less characters, just characters. I can have as many cards in hand as I want. I can have all these shadow cards and locations and things that have all these awesome fun abilities. I just have to control fewer characters than my opponent to get the draw off. Okay, and if I'm have a nice control deck, a nice balanced control deck, if every now and then my opponent gets to draw two cards, okay. You know, he must be in a really shitty spot.
Well, and they've probably already got their own draw engines that they're trying to, you know, get run in. They may have already drawn two cards off of, good grief, I don't know, Toman and a Golden Tooth Mines or something,
yeah.
Right? And then you're only giving them one card.
Yeah.
Or maybe none if they've already drawn.
Exactly. But, they've, you know, King's guarded up all over your face or something. But
yeah, exactly.
I think this is awesome. I think it's fun. I don't know if it'll be, you know, it's not going to be, I don't think they're coming out with agendas anymore to try and, just go nuts. I mean, like Knights of the Hollow Hill or getting kind of crazy with like House of Dreams. You know, you've seen these agendas, like the new summer and winter agendas and these other ones that just kind of make it or like the old one or not the old one, too much Lovecraft, the old way, that just kind of make a universal effect that affects both players. It's not just like this player, there's a good thing that happens, and then, you know, there's kind of a drawback. It's kind of an even thing. And out of all the newest agendas, I like this one the most. I realize that Noble Cause is kind of asinine, but this one, I really like it.
Yeah. I like what you're saying about Martell being able to build toward having less characters. You know, they've got so many characters that can be thrown away for one reason or another. The Dornish Paramours or Orphans or that Shadow guy. You can control your character count pretty much on command. There's the Dane Skirmisher that you can kill on command. I think you've got a lot of options, and the nice thing is that a couple of those are icon control options, so that also plays into another Martell theme, where, you know, I think you could set it up where you may have less characters than your opponent, but, you know, half of theirs may not be able to do anything, and they're just sitting there, you know?
Yeah.
Which makes it feel more even, and, you know, not that you're way down in the challenge phase.
I wish it didn't go both ways. I think I would like it a lot more if it was just a positive or a push for you. Having to swing both ways gets a little... I don't know, like, this would really suck against, like, a Hollow Hill deck. Or characterless.
Oh, yeah. It would definitely suck against characterless.
So.
yeah.
You know, but sometimes that's just, I don't know, something you got to deal with. I mean, look at when we had our Power Behind the Throne mirror match at Worlds in 2012, you know? You just kind of have to accept every once in a while you're going to sit down against that other table, and, you know, it's just going to suck because that's how the matchups play.
So true.
In the mirror match, would they stack? Like your agenda and your opponent's bloodthirst, or no?
Yeah, sure. No. So like, whoever has less characters, yeah. If they hadn't already drawn otherwise, would cap.
So then in melee, like two guys are running bloodthirst, and like one guy's running the Song of Fire, and like.
And yeah. On that note, I give it a C.
Yeah. Once we get into those kind of hypotheticals, it is probably time to rate it. You know, I like it pretty well. Draw agendas, I think, always wind up being pretty good, even if they have something that's kind of self-regulating, like, say, Knights of the Realm. So I'm willing to give Bloodthirst, like, a B.
Yeah, I will also give Bloodthirst a B. And maybe that's where every agenda should be. It's a B. It's good. It doesn't feel insane.
Yeah, maybe that's where all agendas should be. They aren't, though. Something needs to be done to help the white book.
Oh, the white... I don't think... You're right. I know it could be done to help the white book. Print another one.
Oh, yeah.
Print another white book. That's what I would do. Why not? The other white book, that's what we'll call it. or we'll print like little black movie. Book.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. Lady characters reduced by one.
Okay, so the last card. Whose read is that one?
I think that's
the
name.
Is that Daryl?
Yep, okay. The last one is a plot. It is a 4-1-1. It is summoned by the Conclave. It reads... When revealed, each player not running an agenda may search his or her deck for a character card, reveal it, and add it to his or her hand. Shuffle all searched cards. Or searched decks, not cards. That doesn't make sense. Shuffle your searched decks.
Yep.
So, more agenda hate.
Yeah,
nice.
And this one is also pretty good. Potentially having a one-sided search is awesome.
Well, it helps you if you're running the character agendas. If you're not, it's going to give you, you know, whatever piece you want most against that matchup. I think if you're not running an agenda or if you're running a character agenda, this is a no-thought auto-include. I see no downside. Other than, no, not having an agenda.
I mean, yeah, I was going to say, you're not going to run it in an agenda deck, so that's definitely a downside.
Or would
but
you?
It's gonna be a huge boon to the character agenda decks, like you said. So you've got that quick, easy way to search it up right off the bat, and most games don't give your opponent anything for that, which is pretty
rad. I think this is an awesome jump start to... character agenda decks too, right? So
that's literally
just
what
say
I
that.
Said.
I'm so sorry.
All have now said.
All I was doing was stewing on that thought. Like this is awesome.
Yeah, I was agreeing with Kyle there too.
Damn it.
Well, let's see what else. Though it does really give you a nice start there as far as gold. You can go search up your house appropriate no agenda army, House Clegane Brigands, and you immediately have the gold to play it without actually even needing other resources, which is pretty rad for certain houses.
Oh yeah, I like it a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, there's all kinds of gold. We could talk all night about fun, quirky things you can go get and go yep. do. And I think the fact that you can do that with a plot makes it like an instant A.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I maybe won't give it a full A. Maybe just like an A minus. It still has to be you not running an agenda, but or at least not at that moment, since you could go get the character, but yeah, it does a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, I'll give it an A. It's cool. It's awesome.
Well, that's the pack, isn't it?
Yep. That is the whole pack.
It's the whole pack.
It's a pretty good one.
It's a lot of...
I agree. I think it's a good way to end the cycle on, you know? It tied into some of the command mechanics still. Gave us a little bit of new Maester stuff, just in some Maesters, without pushing the whole Maester agenda over the top again or anything,
yeah.
Which I was kind of afraid of.
I also feel like this set, this whole cycle, has kind of like revealed itself little by little. Obviously, it's based off of a story. But it felt like a little bit of a story with each pack that was coming out. And maybe that's it's always supposed to have been, but it really felt this way to me. So I had a lot of fun with it. It's a lot of fun cards. Very, very meta-changing cards.
Yeah, I think overall this cycle brought a lot of stuff that shifted the meta.
And that is almost always a good thing.
Yeah, I think so. It doesn't feel too bad like any one card or anything pushed something over the top here. To me, though, maybe others would say otherwise.
Well, everyone I talked to is real excited, and as some of these cards got spoiled through FFG and stuff there, I can't remember how many times people would ask me, oh, is Hidden Agenda out? Just because they're so excited, because it seems like everyone has a different card in here that they just can't wait to get their hands on, because it'll be that last piece for this or that. So I think when your deck builders are excited, and they're all excited for different things, that's a very, very positive sign.
Props and slops. I'm going to lead with some props to some folks that we actually propped before a few months ago. Michael Conis had emailed us quite some time back now about the first game that they were putting together. And as listeners of the show, I thought it'd be nice to prop their game, which was Lake Billy. Ran a successful Kickstarter. We've got our copy in here at the show. We have yet to find a good, solid night when we can get everyone together and get kind of drunk and get to work on playing that, or play it and get drunk, depending on the order you want to go with. But Michael was kind enough to go ahead and shoot me an email. They are on their second game already on Kickstarter. Their company, Dogmite Games, has got a Kickstarter up on another game called Livestock Uprising. They got about 30 days to go, and they're not quite halfway to their $2,500 goal, which is pretty rad. That gives them loads of time to pick up the other $1,500 or so that they need. The concept here seems to be kind of an entertaining battle between the animals on a farm
with General Billy, Truffle, Longhorn, and Clucker, as you can guess, and, you know, a variety of animals and resources, and turning them into these militant beasts here. The board looks like it's going to be something random each time you play, and so I don't know, it tickles my fancy as far as my sense of humor. It looks pretty sweet, and as fellow Thronesers and fans of the show, we thought we definitely ought to give them a shout out here and direct some people their way and see if that's something you would also like to back.
Anybody have anything good this week?
I guess I'll just go with the obvious one. I'm going to go ahead and prop two things in one single prop. I'm going to prop myself for staying true to my challenge thus far and finishing one book in 2 weeks. And I'm going to prop that book, which is American Gods by Neil Gaiman. I start a lot of books and I don't finish them, and as my New Year's resolution, I was going to, for real, read some books and finish them because I enjoy it, and hopefully it will help me as a person, as a creative person, and all that other stuff, and I've loved it so far. And anyways, but the book is fantastic. I don't even do anything about it because I just want you to go out and read it, and it's best if you go into it blind. And here's the, if you buy this book and you read it and you don't like it, I promise you, I will mail you the money. I will deposit into your PayPal account what you paid for that book in exchange for the book, obviously, so I can give it to someone else. But I will refund your money if you don't like this book. It was fantastic. It really was. I'm not a crazy Neil Gaiman fanboy. I haven't read a ton of his stuff or anything like that.
You should be.
I just picked it up. It was crazy. Whenever I went, me and Robin, we went to Barnes & Noble, and I was just like, you know what? I'm going to pick this book up because a buddy of mine, Kevin Parrott, once talked to me about it. Like, I'm talking at this point like 3.5 years ago, had just said something about reading it, and he liked it. Like, that's it. I just saw it at the bookstore. I was like, I'm picking this up. And from there, it's awesome. It's fantastic.
Glad it was worth it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, speaking of stuff, that does actually remind me of a slop of mine. I mentioned that I was reading George R. R. Martin's the newest anthology that he edited, because it had the newest Game of Thrones novella in it, which I'm eager to discuss once anyone else has read it. But I'm flipping through it, and there's a Jim Butcher story, right? And before each author's story, there's a little like one page bio about them and list some of the other books they wrote and whatever. And so I get to the Jim Butcher story, right? And I'm not all the way caught up on the Dresden Files, right? I think the next book I need to read is Changes. If I remember right, I've read everything up to it. And just in the middle of his bio, like I'm kind of skimming it, it spoils a pretty major thing from Changes that I don't think I'm going to spoil here for listeners. I don't know. Have either of you guys read that particular Dresden book?
Nope, I'm still working my way through the series.
Okay, well, let's just say there's a really big thing, evidently, that happens. And it just casually mentions it and then goes on to say, oh, and here's the story. Now, I mean, it turns out the story is set after Changes, right? So if I had just skipped the bio and started reading it, I would have been like, what the hell? And I would have figured it out. But I think there was some better way to do it than just, like, casually drop this spoiler. Maybe say, hey, this story is set after Changes or something like that. Then the folks that have read it would know what that means. And the folks that haven't read it could go, oh, okay, I should not read this short story yet.
Yeah.
But it just threw it right out there in your face. It was just like, hey, by the way, he wrote the Dresden novels, and then in Changes, X happened.
Yeah, dude, that's the thing about, like, no possible spoiler is worse than a spoiler for a book. And maybe this is because I'm a slow, terrible reader, but I work really hard to read to the end of a book or something like that. So to have it like to have an ending spoiled or a major plot point is just like, oh, come on, man. What's mm-hmm. the what's the point to even read the book now? Like it, there is serious time and effort, you know, put into reading, at least for me.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. And then that's just, it feels like it's kind of a waste then.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't have that suspense.
Yeah.
I guess my prop for the week would be starting a new job. So that's cool, propping nice. Me and the University of Iowa. But
nice.
So that's cool. It's my first Monday through Friday you can sleep at night and work during the day job, and that's pretty sweet.
Very nice. And
sadly, I think the biggest benefit is I can be there on Thursdays to play Thrones now. So real cards with real people, not just Octagon all day.
So, nice. Pretty much.
That's plus.
Big plus.
Cool.
You know, speaking of cards, I think I'll throw out another prop to Ashmark Knight. He's just a nice little workhorse. I really dug being able to actually play with him in a deck now.
Yeah.
Super good. I mean,
yeah, it's really good. Really good. Damn it, Lannister.
So
it's getting better and better every day.
Yep.
I'm okay with this.
One night at a time.
Yeah. Geez, I don't think I have really anything else.
Cool Thrones idea, then this will be my last thing, but our meta this weekend is doing a build it, pilot it tournament, but we're doing it as a blind date. So each deck only gets, you have to describe it after you build it in 3 words. And then we're going to like cover them up, so when you, and then we're going to draft them, and all you get to go off of is the 3 words they chose to describe them.
That's awesome.
And
that's
pretty excited. Cool. Pretty excited.
That seems fun.
Yeah, that sounds awfully fun.
So I will let you know next week how that goes. I've got some janky things I think I'm going to throw at him.
So. Do it.
Yeah. Well, speaking of announcements and such, I think we've got one from the podcast as a whole. I brought this up the other day to Daryl. Mm-hmm. And sorry, Kyle, I meant to text it to you as well, but this may be the first time you hear it. We had announced last week that we were looking at doing our Google Hangouts Live episode in February. And then I realized, I sat down and counted it up when I was editing last week's episode, and I realized, oh, wait a minute, that would be episode like 47 or 48 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, well, how about we just hang on to it for like 2 more weeks and make it episode 150 so that it's, you know, it seems fitting for a little bigger milestone like
right.
that.
Right, and this gives people more of a time to, you know, set the time aside. Hopefully, we hope you set the time aside to join us for a live event. And we still don't know all the details exactly what we're going to do. If we're going to try and make it sort of a longer running affair, more than like 2 hours or something. Cause I mean, we can sit around, we can talk Thrones and things like that for hours at a time. Maybe a 4 to 5 hour event. We don't know. We have ideas. If you have ideas, send them to us, what you would like and whatnot. We want to make it special. It's still going to be an episode. I think that we're going to, you know, edit and all that for as a regular episode. So, you know, don't feel obligated to show, but we would like it, you know, if everyone showed and had a
Definitely.
Blast.
And I think we're looking at maybe doing a couple giveaways
yes.
during the show.
Yep.
Well, so we'll, once we get nailed down exactly what that is, we'll announce some details there.
Mm-hmm. Giveaways.
Yeah.
Some AMA type stuff, maybe.
Yeah.
Some.
We'd like to do it up nicely.
Yeah. So you're not just going to watch us talking. It will be an interactive thing as well, and we're okay. Honestly, we're okay if like 10 people show up. If 20 people show up, hey, that's awesome. If we get like 50 people, that would be insane. I don't think we're expecting that many, but we just think it's gonna be fun. We've been doing this a long time, and we would like to include you.
Yeah. So episode 100 was all about the designers, all on one end of the game. So 150, we're going to bring it all the way down to the other end of the spectrum, and it's going to be about the listeners.
That's right.
And thus the players.
That's right. I couldn't get a PAX East Media Pass without you.
Yeah, exactly.
Andrew.
How rad is that?
I couldn't get through without the designers either, but they already had their time.
Yeah, exactly. They had episode 100.
That's right. Anybody have anything else?
No, I think I'm good.
All right. Thanks for listening to another fine episode of Two Champs and a Chump. If you would like to get a hold of us, you can hit up our Facebook page at facebook.com/twochampsandachump. Or is it Two Champs, One Chump? It's Two Champs, One Chump.
Two Champs, One
Chump. Everything's Two Champs, One Chump, I think, right? Like,
basically. A lot of sites had a character limit, so we had to figure out some way to fit the phrase.
Okay. You can email us at twochampsonechump@gmail.com. Twitter, we are on the Twitters. And we actually have an official Twitch page now as well. So twitch.com/twochampsonechump. Go ahead and follow that. Create your Twitch account so then you'll know when we go live with the event.
Yep, we'll be working on that. So,
yes.
It's in existence. We're making progress.
Yep.
Very exciting.
Danger Zone! Yeah. Turn around, there's nothing to see.